Awesome. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Robots and Red Tape. As always, I am your host, Nick Schott. Happy to have my friend Josh Teal joining us again, and Lauren Westerberg joining us as well. For the folks that don't have the opportunity to know you guys yet, will you tell everybody a little bit about yourselves, your backgrounds, and kind of how you got here? And Lauren, would you please start?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Dr. Lauren Westerberg. I am a developmental psychologist. I got my PhD at Purdue in human development and family science, and then my bachelor's degree at Elon University in psychology. And I essentially study and think about how kids learn STEM, so science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So the ways that kids are exposed to STEM early on in their environments, how they best learn that information, and then how we can kind of provide them really strong foundations in these subject areas so that they have like academic success later and want to pursue majors and careers in STEM, in the STEM space.
Fantastic. Really appreciate you joining. And Josh, do you mind hopping in and telling everybody about yourself and what you've been up to since you were last on?
Yeah, absolutely. First, I'll tell Association Nick. I know you from others of these and other chats we've had, and then I know Lauren because she's like quasi about to be sister-in-law here in the next few years, right? I'm also on Purdue's campus, but we're kind of one big happy family here, so it's pretty awesome to actually be with her in a professional setting as well here, since we see each other at all the family events and whatnot all year. Anyway, so super fun to join today. Thanks so much, Nate. A little background on me. I'm from West Lafayette, went to West Point, studied econ, drifted into tech as I was also progressing up as a special operations commander. Fell in love with tech because my passion is super empowering people with technology, right? And I love the ways that we can do things faster. I love the ways that we can make things safer. I love the ways that we can harness creativity. I can do the research faster, so then I can do the thinking faster. So I love everything about tech. Leveraged that for a bunch of years and had some custom software made. Ran a bunch of commands, got out. We started a mental health company for Proactive, built the tech behind that, stood up an AI center of excellence, which is kind of how Nick and I met. And now we're off on our own working defense technologies here on Purdue's campus, trying to tie all these brilliant minds to national security.
Absolutely, man. Well, first, thank you for joining again. Thank you for all your service, and dude, congratulations on going out on your own. As somebody that's been doing it for almost a decade now, I know how exciting and how fun and like all the things it is and how much it is. Like a lot of people that aren't on this side don't quite understand what goes into it. But I'm sure it's a step down in responsibility from your opportunities in the military though. So hey, glad you're here. I'm glad you're here and glad you've rejoined, man. Really appreciate it. And I am so excited to do this episode today because we're talking about parenting in the AI age specifically. And as somebody with a daughter who's 3 years old, this is something that I think about a lot, is how do we begin to have these conversations with children, with our kids? And so when you start thinking about how approaching these things, and I kind of really think, should we introduce the technology first, or like an AI first perspective, or should we, prioritize, teaching kids foundational skills, things like handwriting, mental math, and analog problem solving skills prior to introducing AI tools? So, Josh, could you weigh in on that, and how do you approach this personally in your life with having children, and how do you how are you thinking about this from not just you and as an individual, but like as a macro societal level?
Yeah, so first, I suddenly had an epiphany that this isn't a new problem. And I went back to when I was like a young lieutenant learning navigation. And they're like, we're learning like the map reading skills. And I'm like, should we be doing that? Or should I be learning how to use that really complicated GPS system better? Right. And then from there, just recently, as we started talking about it again, I started all these things popped up. This is a problem that we face as technology marches for humankind. I'm thinking, do we teach them long division? Do we teach them how to use a calculator, read a map, GPS? Do we teach them how to use a phone book or Facebook? Right. So for me, I'm like, okay, this is apparent all the time. So how we teach our kids and what we phase out and what we phase in is a real thing. AI is a little bit different though, right? Because all the things took critical thinking just slightly changed. How does that fit in with this? So I'm constantly struggling with, do I teach them to think first or do I teach them AI because that's going to optimize how they work with AI? Which one's going to be more advantageous when they're an adult with a competitive job market? Or they're trying to work for a company and solution, right? What is going to set our kids up for, you know, their best lives, right? It's kind of where I go mentally.
Absolutely. Lauren, what do you think?
Yeah, I love the way, Josh, that you just talked about that as like a, it's not really a new problem. Our resources and our tech and what we kind of can integrate into the classroom and our in our homes kind of just continues to improve and take it a step up. And we kind of as parents and teachers have to learn that and learn how to effectively expose our children to it and how to support them in learning those tools. You know, I think it's like an interesting debate in terms of like, well, my kids should be learning like the old way or the way I did things. They should be writing things by hand or and I think there's obviously the other push too, where kids should have a really strong integration and be able to use technology, especially with a lot of our workforce and jobs requiring more things like programming and machine learning and computer science backgrounds. And so we want to equip our next generation of scholars with those tech skills. And so I think it's really a balance. It's a balance of both of finding new ways to integrate the new technology, but then also still have those fundamental, basic level skills that are being taught that are so important.
Absolutely. I also think I love that. I also think that like the amount we rely on technology depends on how early it's introduced. And something that I actually thought of, Josh, when you were mentioning like the GPS problem, right, is that I remember very, very distinctly a time before like having a GPS on your phone and it giving you directions all the time. Like, I remember using the old Rand McNally and breaking it out to figure out where you're going. And it's funny because I have friends that are younger than me and they. The difference, I think, is that I always am looking and remember like memorizing how to drive places because I don't trust the phone that it's always going to be there. The main reason I use Waze a lot of the time is just for traffic, right? But like as you see folks that are younger, they just don't either the ones I know just don't pay attention, or they're just so reliant on the tech that they never know where they're going. And I think it's just really interesting to see kind of how that is going to, or how that's playing out in some of these more simple technologies. And then as we start looking at AI, which to both of your points is like a lot more complex, will be super interesting.
So me and the kids in the morning, we've been playing this game. We call it beat or join AI. That's what we actually call it. And it's like we've got the Waze app, and it's like making it across town to school in the morning. We know our town intimately, and it's like Waze gives us something, right? And we're like, can we beat that, right? Or no, is that the right one? And like this morning, George was like, hey, Dad. It's 7:26. When it's after 7:25, there's always more traffic at that street, and we always hit four lights, and we're not going to do it. Don't trust the AI this morning. Go our way, right? And so they're even like working some critical thinking with how do you leverage it or look at a solution versus what do we innately know about human nature that mixes in, which moves stuff around. Or, you know, a few weeks ago, it's like, hey, Dad, I saw they're doing construction on Main Street again with those sidewalks. Don't go that way, right? And hadn't made it to the algorithm yet, right? It's like you're a genius, right? I don't want you late for school, and I got a meeting. So.
Absolutely. But it's also that, like, we know that to your point about traffic, like, we know that it's going to back up, 15 minutes from now, when we get there, 15 minutes. And the app, because it's all running entirely on real-time data, just doesn't have that kind of insight. At least I don't think it does. Can you, I mean, am I wrong? Is it running on completely real-time? Do you know?
I feel like the longer drives, and Lauren, you should comment on this because you drive so much to and from some places in the Midwest. Like, I feel like on the long drives, it always nails it. It knows that I speed, right? I don't think I can get a speeding ticket for saying that, but anyway, I
They
will
gotta catch you doing
be speeding ticket right? Soon, right? But I'm like, it knows how fast I want to drive or how fast average traffic is. I think feel like the long drives, it nails it, right? Yeah, I have a
4-hour trip to Indiana from Wisconsin every weekend that I take to see family, and I feel like it's been wrong. It'll estimate like about 30 minutes later. I've been noticing on average, it's like estimated that I'll get in at like 8:30 when I'm actually going to get in at 8. So I'm like, there is kind of like this, there's this measurement error, this estimation error. So it's not always exactly on. And then when traffic does pop up really quickly, sometimes it's too fast for it to be notified if it's like a major accident or something. So it is interesting.
I feel like what we just learned is that you're the one that drives really fast here, Lauren.
That too,
Absolutely. But so when you think about this from from a cognitive development perspective, Lauren, how does early exposure to AI tools affect a child's cognitive development?
I think it's important. I think it's, again, we talked about how there have been questions along kind of this pipeline for a long time, even with technology. Like, what is it going to mean when we bring iPads into the classroom or computers, or when kids are able to use calculators or aided kind of tools to help them with particular searches? And it's like something where it's we want them to be able to develop the skill set to be able to do that, but then we don't also don't want to reduce those critical thinking skills. So kind of like the example Josh brought up with like looking at the GPS, like it can be used in a tool as itself, but you can become over reliant on it. But there's also the challenge to kind of say, well, hey, this is just a tool that's also giving me information, and we want kids to always be critically evaluating the information that they're exposed to. Whether that's like a safety thing, if they're online and they're being exposed to something, we want them to be able to critically evaluate if it's a good decision or a smart thing to do, or just to critically evaluate the source where evidence comes from. So can I fact, or can I take this as a good piece of evidence, or is this something that seems questionable? Is there a way to improve it? Like, we want those critical thinking scientific skills to still be happening. So we don't want it to become such an overusage that there's an absence of it, but for kids to be able to kind of use it as a tool to further the way that they critically think.
Absolutely. How have we seen, one of the things that I always think about is attention span. Because I know that especially with the, in the age of social media and like really short videos, like I don't know it for a fact, but I know that it has gone down like societally, especially also when you look at the number of messages that we receive on a daily basis. Do you think that AI will have like a continued impact on things like that, on attention span or, or the ability to critically think if you if the answer is given to you in a way, where it's almost complete, and almost good enough sometimes?
I think it can be impactful. I think one of the things that's important to consider again is how it's being used. I come back to that question. One of the most critical pieces we know that is important to the classroom space, to the home learning space, that kids need is kind of that social piece, that social interaction. And so if kids are using technology or information in a way, we know that there's so much more deeper learning that can happen if there's like an adult or a peer near them that's talking about the information that they're being exposed to. So there's all of these studies back in the day that looked at these educational programs or television shows that came out. And it was basically kind of a way to say, do I have to feel bad as a parent if I sit my child in front of a television? Or can I say, at least if it's like an educational show, that they're like learning something and that like they're getting something out of it and I don't have to feel guilty. But these studies kind of show that even if the show is supposed to teach like math or science skills or something in that realm, we don't see kids walking away. Like there aren't these large effects where they're like, oh, they learned so much from watching this television show for a week or whatever. But they redid that study and then they introduced the element of parents sitting in and sitting next to their children and watching the show with them and asking them questions like, well, how do you think the character feels and what's going to happen next? And has that ever happened to you? And kind of these bridging questions that bring the problems to life and help them critically evaluate what they're watching and to think about it at a deeper level. And then that's when we see those kind of learning effects happening. So we see that kids are learning things when they have that social element at play. So I think it kind of makes me question, the types of classrooms where you see kids with headphones on at computers learning in isolation during circle time versus a situation where kids are using technology, but they're in small groups and they're evaluating information together or they're going to the scientific method together, things like that. I think it's a balance again.
I'm simpler down the tier, so I'll take this back to the basics of bullies and drugs, right? So when I think of so Lauren, everything you said stimulated a few things in me. Just me imagining my kids using stuff right there in the house around me, right? And I think the social media and marketing to our kids scares the heck out of me, right? More so just straight AI interaction, because their AI is being used to manipulate for that dopamine hit, right? That they get addicted to, short attention span, right? Have to have this approval for everybody with these likes, right? You are essentially, it's a self-made drug inside the human body, but you're allowing the technology to drug your kids, right? Which is going to shape what they think and what they react to, right? And then there's the peer aspect and the marketing aspect. That's if AI is being used to manipulate, right? The marketing and the sales, right? But when I see them in the house, so I see that aspect, but I'm actually seeing that attention span goes up to a degree for tailored content, right? So Andrew, when he's researching, we'll say George. George loves animals and he wants to be a veterinarian, and he will watch YouTube videos all day on animals, right? or whatever he's tracking that day for that animal, right? And the AI is feeding in the next video that's still along the line, deepening the learning. I can see that happening, super cool. So I kind of break it down into, AI that's being used for stuff that's for good or for bad, and then the direct interaction sometimes with AI for learning, which is another step too that we haven't talked about. But that research assistant side, like I love, right? Because he can just pull in more information on the topic faster, and it's so tailored to him that it keeps engaged, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right from a subject matter perspective. And so I have a really interesting point of view on this because I don't think I've even told either one of you this. I went to a school from third grade through senior year of high school, and I was not allowed to use a calculator in math until like 10th grade. Right. So I had to do all my math by hand. I had to write all these papers by hand. I was writing about like abstract ideas in 7th grade, and all by hand. And so I think that was really cool because it got, it challenged me. But, I also, from a math perspective, because I had to do so much math by hand, now I feel like I'm far, like I'm able to do mental math a lot faster. Like I went and actually calculated pi by hand at one point in like 9th grade, and like that's something that most people never have the exposure to, and I think it gives a lot of appreciation for the people that did this and like discovered these things, and what they actually had to do to discover them and the levels of math, as opposed to just pushing a button and getting the result. But at the same time, I think that like I believe I was, especially going to school when I went to school, in the 90s and early 2000s, was I believe that, I lost out on things like coding and, and some more of those technical skills that I would have had to then go seek out, and I just didn't, right? And so I see both sides, and I think that, it brings to the next point of digital native versus digital dependency, right? And how can we, how can we ensure that, raising kids as AI natives does not le relieve to over reliance on the technology, or, diminished independent thinking? And like, how you've both brought it up, but like, how do we strike that balance, and kind of where, how do we go about like even structuring a, a system for our kids to understand and appreciate both sides?
I love that question. I've just being in the classroom space so much in the past and observing teachers, I think about teachers who do this really well, where again, they're encouraging students to use the technology first to kind of like, let's see what gets produced. So if we ask the computer a question, what does the response look like? What is the essay prompt we get? Or what is the calculation that gets performed? But then they go back and they do that also by hand too and kind of compare and see that they can come to like a similar or the same type of response as well. So it's like, we can use it, and then we can also understand how it's kind of made or how it's done. And that's like a big thing with kids is understanding the how or why something can happen. I even at the college level, I think of one of my friends who's a assistant professor now, and one of my favorite assignments that she does with college age students is that she's like, look, I know that my students want to go to ChatGPT later and type in the essay prompt that I gave them and just like turn in whatever it writes for them. And so she doesn't shy away from that. She has them do that, but then she also has them go through and they have to like critique certain areas of it and where AI got it wrong and like what actually doesn't stand up if, this theorist were to examine it, what would they have to say about it? And so there's like these interesting ways to kind of integrate again that information and to not shy away from it, but also like still have kids come back in and have to do the work themselves and really think through it deeply.
Josh, what do you think?
Well, I mean, so the first thing I think is there's everything's so clear now, Nick, because you're like the kid that couldn't have candy when they were growing up, and then now they ate too much candy. You couldn't have the calculator, but now there's like tech behind you. You got microphones and cameras and robots and red gas. So it's all clear, right? You're the no candy kid, right? No tech kid, right? I loved your thought there, but then how fast you can do that math now, right? That's where I am. Do you teach them to think first, or do you teach them to think at the same time, right? That's the question for me. So I go back to two things. I think, Lauren, you brought up a critical point, and that's asking them the questions after it, or after the in some sort of tool, is absolutely, critical. So I've let Andrew play a little bit with Copilot, and then, ask him that exact question, what don't you agree with that output? And then I'll tell him to go through and use the AI to research. And I'm teaching them to use it as a research tool. Like say, hey, give me the top five concepts that people believe that are different that relate to this question. And then letting go through and read those and then apply the critical thinking. I'm like, okay, now that you've got the critical thinking, now you can go write your paper, but you've been stimulated, or maybe I'll let you use some Gen AI to get started now, right? But I'm heavily pushing on the research side because there is, as we know, there is so much information out there now. And deciphering the good from the bad is one thing, but being able to get through that and quickly read through an entire library in 5 seconds rather than look up library books to find the two that are decent for 10 days is too powerful for me. So I keep going to a different place though, and not everybody has time to like look at their kid's homework and grade it. So I'll have George go through and look at his math and check the answer. He's got to redo the long division if he doesn't get it right, but I'll let him do it right. And there's this concept of tailored learning. So in homes where it's dual income, so the parents don't have the time because everything's so expensive, or a single parent home where the parents don't have the time, or massive classroom sizes, how do we leverage the tech to make tailored AI so the level of education or the assignments are coming to that kid where they are, so they can get the most movement, right? Because having the smart kid sit through the lesson when he's learning nothing, he's not getting ahead or reaching his progress. Having the kid who's a little behind and doesn't understand the lesson at all is getting further behind. Like, how do we maybe use this in school setting to have tailored education? Like, that's what I keep coming back to.
Yeah. And I would to add to that, I completely agree with you, one, but two, from a tailored education perspective, but it's not just tailoring it to the right, to the right like difficulty level or the right complexity. It's also if as a teacher, your students really well, you can also tailor it from a subject matter perspective, right? So somebody really, really likes baseball, you can take a lot of the lesson and have the AI rework a lot of it and put it in baseball terms that will increase their engagement and then increase their ability to, retain and also be really interested in it because you're putting it in terms of things that they love.
I think that's really interesting. I love that example of kind of like using AI to tailor a lesson plan or maybe the word problems or something in a way that a kid would really be comfortable with, because that's a big task in itself, is to kind of customize your teaching practices to fit the needs of your learners. We have educators with, I mean, the ratio sizes are unbelievable. We have like one teacher to 30 kids or even larger, just depending upon the age group. And so you think about all that time it would take to individualize instruction. That's one of the things that makes me excited about thinking about how AI can play a role in the classroom, is kind of with that idea of computer adaptive testing. So if kids are being assessed at where they are, whether it's formatively or summatively in terms of learning, can the computer then suggest a way for the kids to hone in on those things that they're really missing, those specific skills, or provide suggestions for content areas that could be like further examined? Because we have a little bit of those computer adaptive tests now, but I think there's just so much more room for that to take off, where we can really get a better idea of how to personalize learning and tailor it to kids' specific needs. Because again, it's just trying to meet the needs of so many learners in one classroom is a really tall order for every teacher.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is interesting because kind of what you're talking about, right? You could teach a kid to read, or George has progressed his reading because he likes to read funny stuff and likes to read about animals, right? So just simply by switching the material that he's reading, right? Teaching to read better. But I was also thinking, I was chatting yesterday, my oldest is super into sports stats and is into fantasy football. He's 12 years old, right? And he was asking me there, and I'm like, how can I? I'm always thinking, how can I teach the kids data? Because the blood of kind of the AI era, the through the veins is data. And Andrew was like, man, they should have a stat on how long each lineman sustains his block. That should be a stat for linemen. They should have linemen in our fantasy football team, and based on how long they sustain blocks or whatever, you should get points for that. Like, get the lineman involved, right? Even though he's little, he appreciates linemen, right? Which I like. And I'm like, Andrew, that would be like great data. That would be amazing. Right? And if I told that kid, like, hey, you're gonna take some courses or do this summer school, and they're going to teach you how to make an AI program that can measure the distances for every play and give stats on linemen, he would probably be down with doing that, right? And doing some summer school work, right? But again, it's tailored to what he's interested in, but taking it back to tech and then to data and then also to AI to be able to read it at scale, because we couldn't hire enough people to sit there and measure it on the screen and do it, right? Only AI can do it at scale, right?
Yeah,
Anyway,
no.
just an example, Brandon.
No, but I, listen, I was also a big stats guy from a sports perspective when I was younger, and I wish I'd realized that I didn't know what data science or data analytics was then at all. I had no concept of it, but like looking at that, analyzing all that, I really, really loved that. And I think that if I had realized that, because if you to your point, if somebody had come to me and said, "Hey, do you want to go to school for extra school to go learn about data and data analytics?" I would have said, "No, absolutely not." But if you frame it in a way that of something that I'd loved, like I would have said, absolutely, that would be super cool. Because and it's the same thing, right? You're teaching the same thing, you're teaching the same processes, you're teaching the same, the same ability to sit and think through the and to one of the things we're all talking about is having critical thinking. That's such a huge skill. And I think it'd be great if we could tailor education to where children are able to receive it better. I also have problems with standardized testing, which I think is part of the reason that everything's gotten diluted in the way it has in schools. I understand what we're trying to do, but like I don't know if that was implemented properly. I don't know, Lauren, if you have any thoughts on that, or Josh, if you do, from having parents,
I've got a
being a
question for
parent.
Lauren. I've got a question for Lauren, actually, with standardized, right? So that right now, the most like interactive or tailored, not quite AI, but machine learning that's going on, I see is it's in their math. And based on if they get the math question wrong, they'll increase the level of difficulty or decrease. And depending on the lesson on their iPad, they have to score above so much, like so many times in a row, right? Like, is there more stuff out there or programs out there that are tailoring and going beyond math? Or is it just not in classrooms? Do we just not see it yet? Like, what's some of the, are you seeing anything out there that's really cool? Are we heading in the right direction?
Yeah, it's happening a lot in the research space, and we're trying to get these really important research-based educational curricula and assessments and tools into the classroom. But it kind of is, it depends on, where districts or where schools are buying their curriculum from. And not all of the tools that are out there are backed by research. They're just like sold by really good salesmen or sold in a really good way in the ed tech industry, unfortunately. But to answer your question, yeah, it is happening in the research space, which is exciting. That's actually quite a bit of what I do with my work. I do a lot with we call them like item response theory analysis types, or looking at like the psychometric information of tests that kids do. So even for preschoolers, I'm working on an assessment, getting a lot of data from kids on what they know about science, and then it will use sort of like a model you've described, where they'll be given a bank of items based on how they're performing. So if they're knowing less and less about this part of biology and science, then they'll be given these answers. Or if they're doing better, then they'll be given the more difficult items in the assessment. And so I think we're going to continue to see a lot more of it. It takes kind of the burden again off the educators to specifically identify and have to tailor the information. The test can do it for them. But yeah, I hope it continues to be something that catches on and gets used in a greater ed space. But it definitely is happening in the research space, and even with the young kids and their assessments too.
Absolutely. And you brought up something there, Lauren, that I think is really interesting, and I'd love to ask both of you about it, is how do we ensure that with there's obviously a lot of really well-resourced schools and school districts, and those that are not, how do we ensure equitable access to AI for our children in schools?
Yeah, I really love that you're thinking about this question. I think it's hard already because we think about there's tech, like when we think about access to technology in classrooms and what they're equipped with, there are differences depending upon what type of school kids have access to or where you're living and those types of things. And so the idea of, I guess, creating grants or opportunities for students to be able to access more tech is really important to be able to have those tools. Otherwise, I think we're just going to see these big discrepancies again in between kids who can use these tools in the learning space, and then those who can't. We have classrooms now today where kids get to go home with a Chromebook. Like every kid gets a Chromebook in the classroom, versus we have, schools still that have like a separate library with computers that kids can sometimes access. So it definitely is something we need to be thinking about.
What do you think, Josh?
I think that we need to, it needs to democratize, right? And it needs to be like something in the hands of every kid. Like it's not unlike ensuring like kids have access to food, right? At lunch, right? And they can, the take home programs on the weekends, right? For some schools, right? I mean, we've got water fountains in there, right? This is just a part of society. And if we want to keep the individual, which I care about, and the nation competitive, right? We've got to invest in that human capital. This just has to be something that we invest in as a nation, to ensure every kid's got a device. Now, maybe it doesn't go home, right? Maybe it does stay, but in that school, every kid needs a device because that's the world they're coming into. And you're going to set up a situation where you have people that can't find jobs in the workforce if they haven't been touching it a little bit every day, even if it's not the most advanced AI education programs or something. I think they've got to touch it, and that's got to be an investment and a very thought through, probably at federal level down to state level, because some schools that just don't have the money.
Yeah.
We've got to find a way to get those people and get those kids a way out, right? And their way out is when they're, servicing the robot in, Amazon's factory, right? Not knowing anything about tech or how to interact with it. So I think it's an investment that needs to be a basic thing in life that we provide, right? For
Yeah, I completely agree. I also think that like AI is awesome, but if you don't have high speed internet access, you can't really access it or use it in the same way. So you look at things like that. And I know, like there are school programs that up in that I've heard of up in the Baltimore area where, the kids, to your point, Lauren, they'd be able to go home with a Chromebook, but they didn't have internet access at home. And so like the school district would like park school buses with essentially hotspots around where the kids were and provide access that way. But which is awesome, but like I don't again I think I think that like just like power and water and heating and air conditioning, like internet is a utility of the modern world, and unless you have access to high speed internet, like you can't then you can't participate in the modern world, and you can't continue to have these great leaps in technology. I think if we can give more people access to internet and access to these tools, we're going to be able to continue to supercharge ourselves through the AI age and into the quantum age or whatever comes next.
Yeah, and it reminds me of university campus, right? Like when I am a university student, I get suddenly access to like all these, online journal things, and I get like really cheap Microsoft, suite images. Like, our kids in schools, like, why can't we get them that too? Like, they got a Wi-Fi, log on to the local Wi-Fi or a cell phone, something maybe, right? If you're a student, buckets in, there's a way to do this, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely am such a proponent again and such an advocate for more funds to schools for sure for things like tech too, and then also just support for teachers. But I think a point too that I just thought of being a researcher in the space and developing curriculum or interventions to kind of help promote math skills or whatever outcome. I think of like sometimes we have to be creative with how we access families so that they can benefit from learning, especially if tech is involved. So we've like found in our research that most families have some type of access to a smartphone. So it might not be that they have a computer or a tablet or something, but if we can create activities that function on smartphones, that's a way to reach more families. Or if we can work with community members, like if we partner with local libraries or things like that, then we see that kids can access those computers in the library space and then be able to partake in the learning experience too. So sometimes it's also kind of just a combination of like meeting families where they are relying on community resources and thinking a little bit creatively about how we can reach families.
Absolutely. And just out of curiosity, Laura, I know this is a lot of what you do from a research perspective, but what do you see from our results as kids age, become teenagers and adults? How do you, from what age does STEM being introduced? How does that, impact later, later success or later understanding? And in addition to that, how do you, let's start there. I have another question, but I couldn't think about how to say it.
Yeah, for sure. I love that question. So I specifically study the early years for a reason. I'm a big advocate of educating your children from 0 to 5 in particular. There's just a ton of brain growth that's happening at that time. So much room and opportunity. You hear people say like the best time to learn a language is like before 6 years old. There's a reasoning, the reason behind that and the way that kids' brains work. And so early exposure really does matter. I think sometimes I've talked to parents a bunch in my research and talked about the ideas of doing like science and math. I'll ask them like, do you think it's the role of the teacher in the preschool setting to teach your child science and math, or do you think you have a role in that? And I'm always kind of taken back by the number of parents that are like, the goal of pre-K is for my child to play. I don't want them to be kind of burned out or exposed to too much like learning early on. Like, they'll get that in later school years, or that'll come later. But like their job is really just to learn how to read, or they'll listen to stories, or they'll play. And so we know that kids are actually capable of just so much more now. There's so much work showing that kids develop kind of deep understandings of science and math early on, even studies showing things with infant eye gaze. So with physics, like if you show an infant a ball bouncing off of a wall, they'll look shortly at it because they expect that. But if you show an infant a ball and it moves somehow through the wall and pops out the other side, the infant will stare longer at that. And that's an indication that they're confused, that eye gaze is measured as like, that's not what I expected that to happen, or that's not how I expect that to look. So even before kids are verbalizing, they're learning kind of like laws of the world around them, or they're grappling with information. They're starting to understand how basic science works. And it's really interesting when kids are exposed to science and math. We have these studies showing that there's these long predictive effects. So what you're learning in preschool or before kindergarten is predictive of how you'll perform in later schooling. So it's a really critical window.
Super interesting. Josh, you want to add anything to that?
No, I mean, I just like that there's hope for me to still get smarter because my kids just say that I'm a kid still. So maybe I'm still getting me. Like, I don't know. I thought I was killing it, but apparently not. I come back to I would love for every parent to have the time, right? And even with just four kids of my own and working professional here, there just isn't always the time, especially now when I got to rotate through four of them to get that time. And that's where I'm loving some of the idea of the AI augmentation to help me out with some of that, right? And that interactive two-way rather than just one-way watching like kind of TV is, right? Without the critical thinking. So, getting some support for that for parents, it's just going to help the kids in the long term. That kind of takes me back to, and we really haven't talked about the other risk, right, to me. So this kind of stimulated that for me. And I go back to social development if I'm not having to team play because it's so tailored or too tailored. And I'm back to like play. What's part of the play? The play is also with other kids for the social interactions and how you put different concepts together, which, AI is a bit of ways away from doing that at the human level, right? So that collaboration, the social skills to collaborate, and then also too much groupthink. If everybody gets the same answer for what they're seeing, what does that do to the creativity side? We may know more, but not have the creative side. So I go to some of these other risks. We've kind of highlighted critical thinking, but I'm into like the social dynamics because American, one of America's superpowers is diversity and the fact that we can generally all play pretty well together to solve like the world's complex problems and humanity's problems. So I don't know. I don't know what you guys think about the social risk, right? The collaboration risk, right, of technology.
I mean, I think Lauren, why don't you go first? I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot about this. I am definitely in the social learning space. So I think a lot about kind of early educational theorists or developmental psychology theorists did kind of bring to the forefront this importance of the folks that kids interact with and how critical that is for their learning. So we think about, I don't know if you've ever heard of like Vygotsky or the zone of proximal development, which is kind of this idea of scaffolding. Like I can help my child learn more than they would be able to on their own by just slightly altering kind of what they're learning. So I could make it kind of a little bit more challenging to the point where they need my help a little bit, and then we can figure it out together. And then they've learned something and they're progressing further versus like them being stuck kind of in a box and trying to figure out something on their own. So we can encourage kids to learn deeper. We can be a part of that process. And it's also too, when we think about like kids are such active agents in their environment. So they're acting on the world around them and they're looking for things to happen in response to what they do. And then they're also learning from others. So social learning plays a critical role. I did bring up kind of the example earlier too with the television watching and how pivotal it was to have the parents be a piece of that. A lot of my kind of the research I've been involved with in the past at Purdue in particular was about developing storybooks for kids that could promote math skills, even some science skills too. And it's the same thing where it's like one thing just to read your child a storybook versus our team will integrate something that we call dialogic reading questions. And it's like questions that are on the pages for parents to ask. And they ask things like bridging examples, like how would you feel if you're in this situation, or kind of bringing the content to life to kids to get them to think about what they would do in this situation. There are like scientific method questions. So like, what do you think is going to happen next? Or if they add this to the pot, what's going to happen? Getting them to kind of ask those forward-thinking questions. And then when they get to that point, then asking, was it what you thought had happened? What would you do differently? questions to kind of deepen the learning as they're reading along in the story. It's like the same idea with watching the television shows. And we just see such larger effects or learning effects for kids when they're being asked to kind of critically think, even when they're reading, even when they're television watching. So that is just something we get at that kind of social dynamic piece that really matters. And it's a reason why, group learning has been such a successful tool in the classroom for so long, and why even though some people like frown when they're like, okay, pair up and do an assignment, and you like worry that you're going to be the one carrying the assignment, that group interaction piece is supposed to be a really critical tool, and building ideas off of folks helps you kind of deepen learning and engage with learning in a different way than you would if you were working on something independently.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And you know, I think that it's also incumbent upon parents to, you know, have first, I've always spoken to my kid, like my child, like she's an adult, right? Like I use complex ideas to her. You know, we're talking about like this, you know, how like we're talking about the construction of the solar system recently and how we're all, you know, spinning around the sun and the moon. Like, and I told her all about how that's how we're, you know, the moon was formed because an asteroid hit Earth, and that's where the Mariana Trench came from. And you know, and like having those more in-depth conversations, but then also like when she's in the car and it's just her and I and we're driving, like I take the headrest off of the front seat so that she can see the road and everything. And I start to explain, I'm explaining driving to her already, and some of the because like, and it's interesting. I actually got a lot of this from, you know, from my dad, but specifically with him, he got really into training dogs when he got older. And he still is really into training dogs, and they train them and show him and his wife train and show Australian shepherds. And but like you sit and you watch, I was watching him like do these really complex tricks with these dogs, and I'm like, dude, how do you do that? And it's like, well, it's really simple. You just break it down into very small digestible parts and teach them each piece of the trick in a row, and then you teach them to sequence them together. And right, so it's the same thing. It's like if you can build that foundational knowledge, then you're building on top of it, and then you know, you like I try to show her how to like associate different things, and it's really cool to see when she gets it and like, oh yeah, this is just like that. It's like, you're absolutely right, kid, look at you go. Because it's so cool to see, because it's like, I don't know, I think that people, these are the things I think parents should be doing. And I mean, I hope I'm doing the right stuff though. Lauren, Miss Childhood Development.
Yes, for sure, 100%. I get so excited that you're talking about it that in that way. I think we kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier too. You guys kind of were almost getting to the point of like destigmatizing AI, and that's the way I think a lot about even with just science and tech with families. There has to be a lot of destigmatization that happens there, because I think when we talk to parents about like how they could promote STEM learning at home, sometimes it gets a little scary to think about like, well, do I do science? Like, I'm not dressing up in a lab coat and like necessarily like measuring chemicals or something with my child, like am I actually like effectively doing science? And so a lot of times what we do with parents is just showing them that science is like so prevalent or present in everyday lives. Like I think of back when I would interview with parents, one mom gave me an example of bath time and how when they drain the tub, it creates a whirlpool. And they had this whole discussion around where they've seen kind of that funneling shape in nature and why it does that. Or with folks who have like farms, I remember a mom talking about how like one of their chickens died, which is super sad, but it became this really interesting conversation about like the life cycle with kids. And so instead of it being just like an emotional situation, there was so much learning to be taken away from there, and ways to kind of foster kids' questions and curiosity. So I think a lot of it is kind of destigmatizing what science and math and tech look like for littles and for parents, and what it can look like in the education space, because it's not necessarily just people who look like Einstein or who are in lab coats messing with
I know.
chemicals.
I would absolutely dress up in lab coats with this kid and do science. We have it was my birthday yesterday, and she went to the art store and got a volcano kit for us to build together. So we're gonna build the volcano, and then we're gonna paint it, and then this weekend we're gonna, you know, volcano stuff, because it's gonna be, and it's just gonna be super fun, right? But like, I'm all about that. It's great.
So I'm hosed because my two 10-year-old twins, one is a dog, I think I can train, but Kate's definitely a cat. And she's me, right? So she's like, yeah, right.
Man, listen,
But yeah, so
cats are just upset because it's not ancient Egypt anymore. That was their high point when they were worshipped as gods, and they will not let us forget, and they're mad about it. And I can't blame them, you know?
Kate's on the quest to get back to that level for sure. So yeah, George is very coachable, so it's good. One of the things, as you guys were talking, I was thinking there, and it's You mentioned science is all around us, and I'll show, just kind of talk. So, we've all got, or not everybody, but some of us have some sort of device in our kitchen, like Google, right? I got all this AI knowledge in there. I can ask it questions, it'll generate things for me. And so we were doing something as simple as cooking, right, with the kids. And we were literally just baking a cake. And they asked, like, why does it go up or whatever? And I was like, well, it's yeast in there makes it go up. And they're like, well, how does the yeast do that? And I'm like, I have no idea, right? So as a parent, we just quickly turned around and said, hey, what is yeast? How does yeast make a cake go up? So even teaching them to use it as an assistant or as a parent, if you don't know everything around you, like I can ask Siri on my phone in the car, see something about whatever, and we ask. So it's almost a tool for the parent as well, right? And for me, it's also become a tool if there is a subject that they're passionate about that. And this comes back to me using it. Can it be used for social enhancement, not go into your box for social isolation? If they're interested in something, I'll start spinning myself up on it with Copilot and learning more about it, reading about it, hearing about it for during the day for Siri, so I can talk to them about it when they get there, right? So me using it as a research assistant to actually enhance my social connectivity with my kids is a thing I'm trying out, right? Because they like things that I didn't know about or didn't like, right? So
I love
it's
that.
an opportunity for you to grow and you to learn more. And that's something I feel like we should be modeling as parents, especially is continuous learning and continuous development. Like I'll always, and it's a great consulting line, but I'll always tell if Violet asks me something and I don't know the answer, I'll tell her, I don't know, but I can go find out for you. Like, let's go figure it out. Let's go do that together and learn together. And I'm trying to instill that love of learning and just being a sponge for new information.
Yeah, that's
Well,
something we always encourage. Sorry, Josh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's a good generational trait and something for us all to reflect on. I think there was some generations before us and totally get it where, the parents knew everything and what they said was gospel and that's the way it's going to go. And as a society, there's so much more information out there and we have access to it now. We need to be okay to say we don't know. But teach them here's how you go ask, right? So if you think about, getting that technology and that Wi-Fi for that kid that's maybe in a not a great place, it's a lot easier than it used to be to order or have the money to pay for Encyclopedia Britannica, right? It's easier to get Wi-Fi now than it is to get an encyclopedia years ago, right? Which everyone had in their home. I remember my friend had one and he would go look up, or his parents would have him look up questions, right? We didn't have one.
And it
So
also is constantly updated. You don't need to buy the new version every year like you did with Encyclopedia.
that's absolutely right. Yep, for sure. I'm curious to hear, and I know, Nick, I know you got questions, but there was one thing that I was super excited, and it's what are you guys like the one or a problem that you're most excited that maybe AI can help us solve as it relates to our kids, right? Problem, and then what do we think it can solve, right?
Lauren?
Yeah, one thing before we jump into that, I just want to say too, you made me think of something interesting with that last point about with not being afraid to say it's okay, we can look something up together or figure it out. I think that's something that often will create discomfort or kind of, we call it like math anxiety or science anxiety in parents is like not wanting to help your kid with their homework or through problems because they feel anxious about maybe not knowing the answer. So I think we always kind of encourage parents that it's okay to say we can look it up. But then I also love to, I always encourage parents to take it a step further and not be afraid to set up like a mini experiment in their house or like an investigation and try to get their kids to deduce or figure out what's happening. Even with the baking example you brought up, like, okay, maybe bake something and leave out the baking soda, or maybe try to leave out certain ingredients to figure out which one is the one playing the role, or put yeast in a bowl with sugar and kind of watch that dissolving interaction or what's happening and have them write down in a journal what they're experiencing and have them make draw conclusions. So you don't even have to be the one that necessarily is like the deliverer of information, but you can help them start to figure out, what could be causing it on its own and have them do their own little scientific investigation and detailed journal entries. That could be a super powerful tool.
I've been cheating all the time. I stand behind them when they're doing their homework and I'm like on my phone, like, what's Pythagoras' theorem for quadratic? Or like, spin me up quick, man.
Absolutely.
So.
But I also have no problem. Like, I think that teaching our kids that it's okay to not know and
Yeah.
be that, because to your point, Lauren, it is absolutely like human nature to get uncomfortable. We can get uncomfortable with not knowing. We can feel embarrassed about not knowing, right? But I've personally, at least, not always, but for like the last decade plus, I've looked at when I don't know something, that's exciting. That's like an opportunity for growth. That's an opportunity to learn more stuff, to consume more information, and to potentially and to challenge my fundamental beliefs if it's, if it's that altering and that fundamental to how I view the world. And I don't think everybody approaches it that way. And I'm not sure why, I'm not sure why some of us can and some of us can't. But like I love having the opportunity to learn new things, experience different viewpoints, and have interesting interactions with people who think vastly differently than I do, that value different things than me. Because to your point, Josh, I think that like that's part of diversity. Like that's part of what makes of our superpowers as a nation. Now I forget what your question was, Josh. It was a really good one though.
It was like, what's the one of the biggest problems, and what do you think that maybe AI or technology can solve as it relates to our kids, right?
Something I'd hope for is a way to combat a lot of the misinformation out here, and to get over the like analysis paralysis that comes with Googling something, right? Because you Google anything, right, and you're going to get the 100+ pages of websites referencing the thing, and you don't know which ones are legitimate and which ones are not. And I'm hopefully like things like AI will help kids more accurately and more concisely first value different sources, but also have them help summarize them. And then as you if you can teach your children how to use the how to use these tools and how to go back and forth, and like you can start with say a news article, right? Tell me everything about what's going on in Ukraine, right, for instance. And then you can add additional sources and ask about those sources. I also think it might be easier to bring some additional transparency to help folks understand like who's paying for these sources and this information to go out, because that's always a part of the bias involved. So I'd hope that, but I'm incredibly optimistic about things like that, I feel.
Yeah, that's a good point. Before I answer kind of that question, Josh, too, I just want to like play off of something Nick said. In particular with this idea of misinformation, I think you bring up a really good point. This is something we're really struggling with as educators in the classroom, particularly in the science space. So new educational standards were put forth back in 2013, and this was supposed to help a lot of the way science instruction or science is taught in the classroom, K through 12. And the idea was we really need to teach children an understanding of the nature of science, like why science is done, not that science is just like this big bulk of factual information that's relayed to kids that they have to memorize. But really, it's just these pieces of evidence or theories that are being presented, and we want kids to critically evaluate those, to think about, are there ways that those things could be refuted? How can new evidence come forward? Like they themselves are the ones that interact with that information, and things can always be falsified or changed. And kids should be able to critically evaluate, like, is that a good data source where that's coming from? We don't want them to kind of fall into the buckets of, okay, it was posted on Facebook or it was in the news, so it's true. Like, we want them to be able to engage in good argumentation. And a lot of folks in this space or in the space I'm in will say that we've lost the ability for kids to engage or even adults to engage in good scientific argumentation. And it's just because we kind of hang on to emotional valence, or we attach emotional valence to things, or we just don't think deeply about where data is coming from. We kind of accept it just if it's coming from a specific source that we rely on. And so we want folks to really be able to think about misinformation, to think about, is something a good piece of evidence? How could I refute this? How can I show that this stands or would stick if I test it this way? How can this be changed across time? Because there's such a lack of understanding, and a lot of folks think that, that these scientific laws or theories that were put forth are just things that have kind of existed for so long and have been accepted. But really, they came out of people back in the day messing around with really small concepts, like what happens if I drop a ball and a feather, and they've just been revised through time and strengthened in that way. And so we want kids to be able to do that exact type of behavior.
Absolutely. No, I love that. What do you think, Josh? What do you think something that you would hope that we can help or improve through this process with tech?
Yeah, so first let me build upon or my first thought off of what Lauren said, right? So I spent like the last 2 years setting up an AI Center of Excellence for Heinz, And as we're training big companies and proposal shops on how to act interact with the AI, they're called prompts, right? Which prompts are, they've gotten to the point where they're a lot less scripted because the AI has gotten so much better, right? It can just be more conversational. But it's all about, if you're a parent, the prompt and teaching the kid, or one of the things I'm focused on as they interact with AI, is the prompt, right? It's how to ask the right question, right? To ask a question, right? So I don't ever want them to know or ask what is the answer. I want them to ask what are the options, essentially, right? What are the competing theories, right? What are the positions around? Andrew was asking something the other day about something with politics, right? And he's like, well, this group is better because they think this. And I'm like, well, let's go ask the question and say, what are the competing theories on this and why? Right. And so that prompt and teaching our kids to ask the right question, not the answer, I think is going to be super, super important. I always go back to a book, always start with why, right?
Just enough.
The thing that I'm most excited about is I think about how impactful some guest speakers were when I was growing up in the classroom, right? And it's hard for the teacher. They got to set it up, the coordination, writing the letters to probably 10 people, hoping one will respond, getting them there, finding some funding to fly the person there. And I mean, the difference is, it's like our kids can access so much information now at the pump. I mean, it's all like the world is like right in this thing here. Like so much of the world's knowledge, I can get to it through this thing in my hand, right? And what used to be really hard to get a SME, a subject matter expert, to come in and talk to kids, or for them to get asked to ask questions to, the encyclopedia, which ages out or dates out quick. Like the world is literally in their hand, right? And we just got to teach them how to thoughtfully interact with it. And I mean, I think all of our problems in the globe, we've made many of them, but we can also solve them, right? And I think this is the tool, right? And AI is the tool to super enhance their learning and their access to SME knowledge, right? I'm kind of excited, but kind of scared. Like, imagine when you can take all of the written works of Abraham Lincoln, and the AI will take on that persona. We do this now in proposals. Hey, evaluate this proposal, and the panel is going to be one DoD executive, one rocket scientist, and one acquisition officer from DoD, and it'll take on the persona of those panel members to evaluate your proposal. Imagine when they can ask Abraham Lincoln questions, and it's going to be fairly accurate based on his writings. Like, how cool will that be for learning, right? So I've got more excitement than apprehension, but we've got some work to do, and it's our responsibility, I think.
Absolutely. It is. And one thing that I'm really curious about, Lauren, is how do you think that, like, how do AI interactions affect children's, like, emotional intelligence and empathy? Have you seen data around this yet?
I haven't seen data specifically around this, but I like kind of understand this frame of thinking too. We hear a lot about like kids being glued even just to their phones nowadays and not being able to carry or have a conversation at the table anymore. And like one worrying about these like social detriments to kids, and like thinking about if that could only get worse with AI, if like kids are primarily communicating or learning or getting information from AI, what does that look like? And so I think it is like a legitimate concern. I think again, if we think about the balance of using tech in combination with social learning, some of that kind of goes away. Being able to integrate, I think, is really important. But yeah, I think there's risks to being reliant to on something too much and not getting out there and having like basic social interactions or communicating with people. I also think too that there's emotional risk just with being in the tech space alone for kids. Like we talked about, kind of like the exposure that they can have, like advertisements that are geared towards kids. I think there's like, the more greater risk of like cyberbullying or, there's things nowadays like cyber stalking or safety concerns that we have to worry about with kids too. So I understand there's kind of risks that come along with it. But I think a lot of that too can have like a lot of what can help with that is just teaching again critical thinking skills, having kids evaluate if things are a good idea or what kind of what is missing there, what seems like something that I should do and what seems like something I shouldn't do, what's a good idea. I've got
Absolutely.
a social experiment to share.
I'd love that.
Yeah.
So I was watching something on with Matthew McConaughey, and he supposedly, I don't know if he actually does it, but supposedly he'll talk about how he does these 21 days where he kind of leaves the grid and goes somewhere. And he says that it takes him 13 days to fully unplug, right? Before he actually can open his mind to the new things, right? And it's interesting that when I take the kids in Wisconsin, I see this as well, because we go no technology from like 8 a.m. to 7, 8 at night, right when dusk starts coming. And it takes them, no kidding. So if you're a parent doing this, right, it takes about a day to 36 hours, right, a day and a half before they're not outside like pissed and bored. And then they're just in it, right? And they're like learning it and doing the things, right? And then what I realized, or what we started doing, when I started doing this, is George loves to do like charcuterie board with me before he goes to bed. He's always eating everything as a 10-year-old boy. And that's when we started talking, and we start like researching the things. As we started talking about the things from the day, that's when we start researching it, like some weird frog he found, or whatever it was out there, some creature, or why something was happening. Like one day he just like wanted to know more about gravity, right? As he was pouring water down the hill to make a trench in Grampy Pants's hill next to the stairs, that's going to totally destroy his stairs eventually. But how does gravity work, right? And so, this interactive of the experiential, then back to the answers, back and forth, that's up to us as the parents to set that up, right? To make those boundaries or work that. But that experiment, it takes like 36 hours before they'll stop being bored and actually immerse themselves in it. But then we amp up the learning once we pair in just the tech at night, then, right? Once they're in the on limits time of the tech, right? So it's been a cool experiment, right? Not intentional.
Yeah, no, I actually remember it was I was like, oh God, I was either a senior in high school or a freshman in college. I remember I was a freshman in college, and I it was just back. I had the old Motorola Razr, and I don't remember how it happened, but it broke, right? Like the thing snapped in half, whatever. And I didn't have a phone. I had to get a new one shipped, and I didn't have a phone for a week. And it took like 2 or 3 days for me to not be like constantly looking for it. And that was a lower level of technology that was far less engaging, right? And then I loved that nobody could get in touch with me unless I wanted them to, right? Like it was awesome. And then the phone got in that, but that was the last time I didn't have a cell phone on me, right? Like was it like 20 years ago? And so I like and like especially as an entrepreneur doing these things, I'm just always plugged in, I'm always on. And I aspire to the day where I can take a 22 day retreat and just have no technology and don't need to talk. That'd be amazing. Yeah, I'd love that. Totally. So I don't know. What do you think about, like, how do you, well, Lauren, how do you think that, do you, what age do you think it's good to introduce children to AI and AI or tech in general, and how should we, are there areas or ages that's more harmful, or how do you think we should approach that?
Yeah, I wouldn't shy away from having kids experiment with that even early on. Like I'm always, again, a proponent of introducing it in the early childhood period. I think it could come even as early as preschool. I think, again, it's just the way that we do it sensitively and thoughtfully and intertwine pieces of social learning. But I think even with tech usage with young kids, I think there's ways for them to kind of understand how tech functions too. Like a big thing within the early childhood realm is to break down things into models or like prerequisite like skills that kind of like build upon what they would learn later on. So if I want my young kids to think about computer science, I'm not going to sit them down and have them do like complicated programming at a computer when they're 4 years old. But what I will do is I might use like, have you ever heard of like an Ozo bot? It's like
No.
a OZO bots. It's a little robot. You can purchase them. I've seen them used in classrooms before. It's a tiny little robot, and you get a colorful pen, and you can draw like a pathway for the robot to follow. And if you draw like a sequence of colors, like if I do a red, green, red pattern, then the robot will spin. Like it does all these different actions based on what kind of things you've drawn on in the trail. And so it gets kids to kind of start thinking about programming early on, kind of like those basic computer science skills. So you can start learners really young, but it's just broken down, kind of digestible pieces of like, how do I use technology to help me figure out like a solution to a problem? How can I use a tool? Like even kids working with basic tools like magnifying glasses and starting to identify like what's the function of them? Not just like, can I use them to get to the answer, but what is the function? What is it doing to make this problem easier? Just identifying those pieces of information are like a starting point to build off of how we can use tech in a more complicated way later on. But yeah, I'm never someone that's going to shy away and say that we shouldn't integrate things even as early as with the littles.
So I think somebody's going to be getting a new toy soon.
Yeah,
Ideally.
I'm about to take two leaps on the toys. We're about to get a drone. And some of the basic things we're going to do is like fly to shore of the celery bog right nearby, so George can like look at other, creatures and all the habitat and wildlife out there that we can't get to, right? Because there's only certain viewing points. And then we're gonna take the leap on a 3D printer. And on Amazon, they're like $150 now, right? Like we can do this, right? Put your designs out there, get the designs, make whatever they want to make, right? And start to move down that realm, right? But and that's where I'm kind of like, okay, I've got to set the conditions. If I just don't want them using it for whatever, because they're gonna be playing with the tech. Like one way or another, if I can get them geared into some things maybe they like with the tech, that's where it's maybe advancing some of the learning, right? So that's what I'm thinking with it. It's time to take the AI, take the capabilities, take the technology out there, and then make it applied, right? It's not just for what you want to play with in your own time as the babysitter, right? It's okay, let's gear this. But I got to set those conditions as the parent, right?
Absolutely.
How do we teach them how to prompt or engage with it and talk, right? How do we force them still to take an idea, talk with their siblings? They're both researching two things at once, right? How do we do it when we're cooking, right? Like it's still up to us to set the conditions from the societal side. And I think that mitigates that risk down as we add in, more of the thinking. And I try to focus on the research. That's my plan.
Awesome. Yeah. No, I mean, I really only have like three parenting goals. Like, truthfully, it's like I want to teach my kid about emotions, like what they are, how to interact with them, and like that there are no good and bad emotions, but you can do good and bad and things with emotions. That's key. I want to teach her how to solve her own problems, right? And how to like and how to critically think through situations and come to her own conclusions and how to solve her own problems. And I think if I teach her those things, like she got the rest as long as I give her like the right, as long as I continue to provide like the right environment for her. But if you like, I think that that's super, super important. I think problem solving is a huge skill for kids. A friend of mine actually did a lot of research at actually on PTSD in like the early late 90s, early 2000s at the PTSD Research Center up in Boston. And they were looking at he did a lot of his doctoral research around why people who go through similarly traumatic situations have different caught like different levels of PTSD symptoms presenting. And according to the research, the biggest indicator for the severity of PTSD was your ability to solve problems. Super fascinating. Is unrelated to what we're talking about, but I just, it sparked something that was really interesting. But from a parent and teacher roles perspective, what do you think parents and teachers should be doing differently today to prepare our children for a world where AI is ubiquitous?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think learning themselves, again, we kind of brought up early that this is an issue that's not necessarily a new one, that things are always changing, that technology is always improving. And so I think it's like sometimes to a detriment if you're not willing to kind of explore that and to learn about it yourself, because it is kind of like a I can learn with my child type model, or we can work on this together type approach, as opposed to like, again, it could be something that's stigmatized. It can cause kind of fear around it, or maybe uneasiness or discomfort for parents to want to jump on board and to learn or to do with their kids. And so they might shy away. But I think a lot of it is just kind of like taking that down and helping people see the usefulness of some of these tools and seeing the what can come from it if they learn it alongside with their children too. So I think a lot of my work, even with research, even just being in the early STEM space, is again destigmatizing things, showing what tech and science can look like in the early years, in an early space, to show that it's in everyday situations and that it's useful to alleviate fear, that we don't have to know all the answers, but that we can explore with our kids, and that's what matters anyways in the grander scheme of things. So a lot of work around destigmatizing and just kind of showing usefulness and the purpose of why these things can be important for kids to work with.
Absolutely. Josh, what do you think?
I was thinking about the speed of interaction. And so one of my daughters was having problems with a specific type of math problem. And I kind of figured out because I kind of go through her homework in depth, right? And then gave her more math problems, right? But with that, making the math problems, I went to Copilot and said, hey, make me 10 more math problems on this subject. And it did that, right? I would love to see, tailored education plans or tailored interaction for teacher to parent. I think it's really difficult. So when AI can write it for you 100 times faster, right? Can the teachers work some customized messaging to the parents so the parents know what to do? I mean, if you think about it, awake hours, my kids are with the teacher more than they're with me a day. Right. So I need the feedback of, what to work with them on, what to think on, maybe even some sample problems. Before you couldn't have done that, right? But maybe AI can give them the speed to handle the scale of the parents, right? Maybe we'll see. But that would be something I would love to see, in the future, right? I do a lot of stuff with teaching people how to use the voice transcription, right? So I taught a professor here on campus how to take lecture notes for slides. The other one I taught him just go for a 20-minute walk and just go for a walk and talk into your voice transcription app everything you're thinking now about this subject. Export the text out, dropped into AI, and said, hey, only use what's in this thread and design me a grant out of this. And then made it in seconds, right? So, teachers may be in a place where they can just, we usually communicate verbally faster than we can write. Right. Maybe they can verbally orate their notes on a student faster, and then the AI is going to take it and punch out the note to me, right? Or something like that. So I'm excited for maybe to go that direction for the connection between the teacher-parent interaction. Will AI help the teacher handle the scale? Right.
Yeah,
That's
I
exciting.
go ahead, Lauren. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I was just going to say too, you bring up an interesting point with, again, kids being with teachers for so much, a great part of their day too, and thinking about how to get AI used in the classroom. I'm always kind of thinking about that teachers are under like already such big demands. They have so much that they're already doing, and they're completely, like, sometimes there's like lesson planning time that's built into teacher pay scale, but sometimes it's that all the lesson planning that they do would be externally and outside of like what they're compensated for. And so anytime we're suggesting like new tools or resources or whatever for folks to use in their classroom, sometimes there is hesitancy around that because it involves completely shifting a lesson plan that's worked for years or something, or activities, and thinking about how can I integrate that in the classroom. So I think one thing that could be really helpful is just thinking about how we can incentivize kind of using technology or AI in the classroom for teachers, just for them to see that it's like something that could be really beneficial, and how we kind of pitch that information to them. So
Yeah,
I
so
think
I'm
that would
thinking
be
like
helpful.
we when we were using AI for supply chain analysis and risk analysis, and we still had the analyst in the loop, but
Yeah.
essentially it would scroll through zillions of things and then our analyst would do a quick confirmation. So, as we're just playing this out, I'm thinking if the AI is looking at all the grades of all my kids' stuff, right? And then say, here's the recommendations. Can the teacher just do a confirmation on it and then hit send to me, right? With teacher in
Yeah.
the loop, but some tailored extra help or the tailored lesson plan, right, generated, could that save them time? So
Yeah.
I'm with you. It's the time is the main resource, right?
For sure, yeah.
Can't make more of it, right? And I'd also love it if we could ensure that, like, maybe we give not just the messaging itself to parents could be tailored to ensure that they're going to receive it. Because what you say, people hearing something is a lot less to do with what you say and more to do with how you say it. And if you can put these into words where you're not going to make parents combative or and you're going to put them in a position where they will receive what you're going to say and understand what you're coming from the place where you have their child's best interest at heart. Like that would be great. Maybe that would make not just help with communication, but make communication more effective, which would be awesome. So my last question for you both is if around future-proofing children, and if you had to pick one skill or a mindset to future-proof kids in the AI era, what would it be and why?
That's a good question.
Future proof. What do you mean by future proof?
Well, you think about how fast the world is changing, right? And the AIs we're AI we're using now is the worst it's ever going to be. So how do we make sure that we're setting kids up for success, and either it's just from a skill set perspective or a mindset perspective?
Well, I think we're back to this piece of like, it takes time to learn stuff, but everything's changing so fast. And so I'm coming back to this idea of how do you, and the AI is going to change faster or deal with that, or essentially be able to learn and analyze faster than the humans can at some point without a lot of reading, something like that. So how do you teach them to leverage the AI to grow at the speed of technology or the pace of change in the modern world, right? And I think some of that comes into just asking the questions, right? Some of it comes into the tools and technology select, but they've got to figure out how to use that as a tool to keep almost upgrading themselves, so to speak. And that all comes back to the awareness to know the changes happen, then ask the question, do the learning, and keep the enhancement going. Somewhere in there, I don't have a good fit, but it has to help them at the speed of technological change. Right? Otherwise, it will pass you and you're gone, or other people will pass you that can constantly learn and update faster. I think the other thing I've got to tell them, and all the it's this terrible situation of, they say, Bill Gates and everybody, like, they read 3 hours out of every day, right? Right. Well, your average person that's making a wage may not be able to do that. But how do you protect the time to constantly be updating yourself and learning? And for the average person that doesn't have as much, you've got to leverage the tech and the AI to help you learn faster, is kind of coming back to the point I made, right? Because you've got to invest in upgrading yourself. It's not you learn one skill at college and you go use it for 30 years, right? One skill lasts about a year. So.
Absolutely. Lauren, what do you think?
Yeah, three things kind of relatedly. I'll repeat again. I think destigmatizing science is a big thing, and it matters even when we think about AI. I think kind of the next thing I would say beyond just destigmatizing is, again, pushing the nature of science narrative, which is that science is for everybody, AI is for everybody. It has practical uses. It's something to not shy away from. And then I think, too, just continuing to kind of bolster or foster curiosity in kids is something I hope we never shy away from or gets lost with that. I think if kids continue to ask really important how and why questions, I literally think there's no better question than how or why, instead of just asking, like, what happened or what is it, or those types of things. But then really getting at like the mechanisms of how or why something works is really important. And so I think continuing to push that and foster that in kids is huge.
Absolutely. I would add, like, for me, it's really two things that I think about is I think it's first, it's building a capacity for being comfortable with not knowing things. Because I mean, we all know folks that like when you get them outside of their area of expertise, they just fall apart and they're not comfortable with like not being the expert. Because I think that that leads into the passion for learning, right? Because if you enjoy the process of learning and you have a true passion for learning and continuing to grow, I think that, as the tech changes and the world continues to change, that you're going to, love and enjoy that prospect of, keeping up with it. And if you have a capacity for not like a capacity for being comfortable with like not knowing things, like that will feed into that. And so that's kind of where I come from, on that point. But before we wrap up, do you guys have anything else to add? Any points that we didn't get to make? This has been super fun. Great conversation.
The future can be brighter, right? And everything that is now was once a dream. So I'm excited to see what our kids make, right?
Me too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Lauren, Josh, thank you so much for joining. This has been great. Everybody, thank you so much for listening to Robots and Red Tape, and I hope you're having a wonderful day.